Hello. So before I begin this podcast, I'd like to reemphasize the fact that PhysioMentalist is here to help you. As a physiotherapist student and as a young physiotherapist, feel free to reach out to us. Hi. So in this segment, I will be talking briefly about random things I think you should know as a physiotherapist when it comes to assessment, especially a neuro case, and just general stuff about physiotherapy. I'd like to start with this. So yesterday, I was in a situation I didn't really like, and of course I learned from it. So I'd like to say this for young physiotherapists like myself, and of course you, my listener. Whenever you are seeing a patient with your senior colleague, senior physiotherapist, and your senior colleague has a different opinion, which you don't necessarily think is all right or you're right, as a young physiotherapist, you don't have to argue with the senior physiotherapist, especially not in front of your patient. So there are ways you can chip in your opinion. So instead of saying, "Sir, I don't think this is right," you can say something like, "Sir, why can't we try this? I think I saw it somewhere that this works," things like that. So you don't have to argue. Show mutual respect. Respect is key. Irrespective of the stuff in your head, you still have to respect your elders. Okay, so now to neurological assessment. So there's this thing that Nigerian physiotherapist that I've observed everywhere I've ever worked. So there's this pattern that everyone follows. The way you write or present a complaint, the way you must write your history of presenting complaints. So most people just cram that pattern instead of instead of focusing on each patient as they come and just assess them as you see fit. So presenting complaint, like I said, won't be going deep into each. I'll just talk about the things that I observed briefly. So for acute stroke patients, let's use that as an example. Acute stroke patient, you see someone writing presenting complaint that patients can't walk, inability to walk, secondary to all sort of stuff for an acute patient, which is completely wrong. So what should you put in your presenting complaint? Because at that point the patient is probably patient was admitted to your hospital, and the patient has now been referred for physiotherapy probably the following day or 2 days after admission. Patient is still in cerebral shock, flaccidity everywhere. So we don't know how much motor involvement. If you understand what I'm trying to say. So since we don't have the full picture of the motor damage yet, you don't know what you'd base the presentation of the patient on. So it's best to just write something as simple as this. So the presenting complaint: patient was admitted via A&E 2 days ago based on what fact that patient collapsed at home. That was why they brought the patient, because they collapsed. So on arrival to A&E, it was on admission to A&E, what does the CT scan show? The CT scan or MRI showed blah blah blah. So at that point, at the acute phase, the diagnosis is based on what findings, what investigate, what investigation you guys have carried out. So be it CT scan or MRI, that is what we are following. That's what would suggest what the presenting complaint of the patient is all about. So and then when you're talking about the history of presenting complaint, you don't need unnecessary story. Unnecessary story. First, you want to talk about what happened at home and talk about what has happened since admission. Those are the major two things we need information about. So at home, patient was found lying down by the wife who found the patient. How long ago was the patient, has the patient been on the ground? About 3 4 hours ago. What else? When the wife found the patient, what did she observe? So the patient was observed to be this, that, and this. Is the patient responding? Was patient able to walk? Was it so basically you write from the point view of the person that found the patient. So that's the first few line. And why do you need those information? For example, you want to know how long the patient has been on the ground. That would suggest if the patient was treated following the right protocol at the A&E, and that could determine the prognosis of the patient. What do I mean by this? For normally, the guideline according to the National Association of Stroke, wherever, is that for the first 2 3 hours after stroke, the patient should be given thrombolytic therapy. So if the patient collapsed for like an hour and they brought the patient to an A&E and there was no thrombolytic therapy and the patient was referred for physiotherapy, it is good for you to note it in your history that that was what happened, because not giving thrombolytic treatment could worsen patient prognosis by what exposing the remaining cells in the brain to hypoxia, and that could make things worse. So you need informations like that. And then on arrival, you want to know what did person that attended to the patient noticed on arrival. You can only say this in the case note. So on arrival, the patient did the patient respond to basic command? You want to know that. Was the patient weak? Or how is the tone of the patient and the reflex of the patient? You'd see that in the case note. So usually in the acute stage, the tone and reflex will be reduced. I mean, will be reduced. That's the normal expectation. What else? Yeah, even your drug history. You want to talk about the drug the patient has been commenced on since arrival. So it's not just limited to the drug the patient has been using. You want to talk about the drug the patient, the hospital commenced the patient on since arrival. So patients was commenced on amlodipine and blah blah blah. So what else? Family and social history. Okay, that's another major thing we should talk about. When we say family and social history, that family history there isn't patient marriage and patient children. That's not what that family history is. That family history is when you are talking about a family issue of an illness. talking about hereditary. So, in any condition that you don't think hereditary could be a major factor, there's no point writing family and social history. Just go ahead and write your social history. Social history encompasses the marriage, the children, the occupation, what the occupation is about, hobbies, smoking and alcohol, things like that. Those are centered around the social life. But family history is about the family history of Ine. So when you're writing FSH, make sure you put if there is a family history of probably hypertension or this or that. But if you're not doing any of that, just write social history. So another thing Nigerians clicking really puts is the doctor's notes in your subjective assessment. It should be there. The consultant handover. The person that referred the patient to you, what did the person say about the patient? But because of the way patients get referred to physiotherapy, consultants rarely write a note. But when they do, if you're lucky enough, you put it there word for word how it was written. So the handover, the referral note usually should have like a few lines about the patient and why they have referred the patient to you. So you are meant to write that into your subjective assessment. So what happens in the objective? For observation, there's this pattern in our head as Nigerian physiotherapists. Patient is, how do they even put it? A young man looking fine, a 75, a bit old man looking fine, anecdotic, a cyanosis, a febrile, not in any obvious respiratory distress. But some people don't even check anymore. And they just like put that down. I'm not saying it is wrong, but like I said, don't follow a pattern. Just try to, even if you're following a pattern, try to check and confirm it. But the most important observation, the most important observation is what I call the creed. CREAD. You want to check C. What does C means? Consciousness. Is my patient conscious of the observation? What is R? Responsiveness. Is my patient responsive? What is E? Eye contact. Is my patient making eye contact? And A, attempt to communicate. Is my patient attempting to communicate? And D, drowsy. Is my patient drowsy? So, creed. Conscious, responsive, eye contact, attempt to communicate, and drowsiness. So, for acute stroke, please don't join others into assessing the motor affectation of an acute stroke patient, for example. Why? Because you don't have the full picture of what that is, and you would always find the same thing in every patient because the tone is gone, the reflex is gone, so you'd find the same thing, flaccidity. So the most important thing at that point is respiratory assessment and care. Why? Because we need to minimize cerebral damage by avoiding what? Further hypoxia. So our primary aim of treatment should be respiratory management. That should be our highest priority. So observation is important. After observation, you also talk about patient's bed mobility. How is the patient participating during treatment? Is there any attempt to move when you ask them to move? Is there also during your observation, of course, you talk about how you met the patient. What did you see? Everything you saw when you came. Is there an IV cannula in situ, put it down? Is there anything you see, including the bed the patient is lying down on? What kind of bed is it? Because all of that would affect what your plan for the patient would be. So, and respiratory system, of course, is the most important thing. You auscultate respiratory rates, you check your SpO2. If the patient is on oxygen, check the percentage. You check like everything. You palpate. Yeah, basically everything. So, and then you formulate your plan. Okay, what other things should we talk about? Like I said, random stuff. I made mention of thrombolytic treatment. You should know that that is different from anticoagulant treatment. So thrombolytic treatments are like drugs. They otherwise call them lytics. They dissolve clots, blood clots that had already formed in the brain or anywhere. So they dissolve the ones that had formed. Why anticoagulants would prevent another one from forming. So immediately after stroke, thrombolytic treatment is given to dissolve the other clots that are still there in the brain. And then anticoagulants like heparin be given subsequently to prevent another one from forming. What else? Let's talk about stroke and aspiration pneumonia. Why do we have what's the relationship between two? Because most stroke patients are at risk of this condition, especially hemorrhagic patients. Why? Loss of consciousness. That's why. Loss of consciousness, especially in hemorrhagic patient, or reduced consciousness. Because once the consciousness is reduced, it affects four things that increases the chance of having aspiration pneumonia. The first thing it affects is emptying of the stomach. So gastric emptying is reduced. So we have more gastric content. The sphincter between the esophageal sphincter between the esophagus and the stomach is the function is reduced too. It's not as strong, so it's not preventing the gastric content that is already much from going up back into the esophagus. The protective reflexes also are diminished. So reflexes are supposed to keep prevent the backward movement of contents from the stomach back up into the esophagus and higher up into the lung. And even the coordination between the chest and the stomach is affected. The movement between the coordination between the two is affected or due to loss of consciousness. And what would this do? Increase the chance of patients aspirating the contents into the lungs. And once they get into the lung, usually go into the right main bronchi because of the vertical orientation it has and because it's higher up. And this could further lead into infection, lead into yeah, all sort of stuff and complicate the patient's case. Well, of course we are physiotherapists. That is why we are there to prevent it from happening and even after it has happened to alleviate it. Okay, yeah, that's it. The last but not the least, someone asked me yesterday why hypoglycemic patients and hypoglycemic patients, both hyper and hypo, present with similar symptoms. So the answer is this: either hyperglycemic, hypoglycemic. Remember that the cells are still not getting enough glucose. The hyper and the hypo is just talking about the concentration of the plasma glucose con glucose in the plasma and the blood. So the glucose being in the blood doesn't translate into the glucose being in the cell because for hypoglycemia, the cell isn't getting enough of the excessive glucose outside. Hypoglycemia,
the cell isn't getting enough also from the low glycemic content in the blood. So that is why. So both of them would present it similar, and the symptoms they present it are usually neurogenic. Why? Because see, every other tissue to some extent can produce its own glucose. Using gluconeogenesis and I think glycogenolysis. So these two process helps them produce their own glucose to some extent, but the brain cannot do that. Cannot supply its own glucose. It depends on arterial glucose content, and if it is excessive, it is. If once it's not getting enough of that, it should start malfunctioning. So headache, lightheadedness, blurriness, loss of consciousness. Even it could even lead to death. So yeah, that's it. So, what could result into hypoglycemia? Critical illness could result into it. Illnesses like sepsis, renal failure. Why? Because in these illnesses, glucose utilization exceed glucose intake in the cell. So yeah, glucose level. Plasma level will be reduced. Malnutrition, of course, can lead to hypoglycemia. Tumor too, in the islet, the pancreas. Non-islet tumor could increase circulating insulin, and once that increase, to reduce the glucose flowing around in the blood. And then pharmacologic reasons. So I think some research agreed that. Hypertensive, some hypertensive medication like the ACE predisposes to hypoglycemia. What else? Alcohol. Yeah, just stuff like that. So when do we say that the patient is hypoglycemia? As this triad called the Whipple's triad, Whipple's, Whipple's triad. So the plasma glucose has to be like really low, less than 50 milligram per DL, and patients must exhibit symptoms of hypoglycemia, and then the patient symptoms must disappear after the patient has been given IV glucose supplement, so the symptoms must go. So that's when would say that the patient has hypoglycemia. Okay, so tomorrow I'll try to get more random stuff too.
Hey, I'm sure you've learned one thing or the other. Don't go yet though. Check the list of our recorded podcast and find one more to listen to. My name is Abbas Ademola.